Welcome to Libertarian Counterpoint. I am your host, James Just. With me today is Mr. John Cameron, author extraordinaire. John, California lawmakers are at it again. They're, you know, for those of us who lived through AB 5, we've seen this before, but this time it's that bill that they passed to raise the fast food, minimum wage for fast food workers, right? First, they had a carve out for Panera Bread, which wasn't actually, it wasn't specifically for Panera Bread, but it was specifically for Panera Bread. Yeah. And now they're going through and more carve outs.
Yes.
And we know how this works. For those of us who watched AB 5, this works as you pay to play. Hmm. And so those people who paid the Democrat Party are getting their carve outs. They're getting their money's worth, are they not?
And the people pulling the strings behind the curtain are the SEIU, Service Workers International Union of Thugs. I don't think thugs is in the title, but so you know what's happening again is that the stated, I don't even know why the stated goal is there, because every single study ever done by anybody on the left, right, middle, or parties we've never heard of indicates that minimum wage laws cause job losses for unskilled workers. And yet they do it. And you think, why do they do it? Why do they do it? Why do they do it? Well, it's really simple. The unions that run the state of California want fewer unskilled jobs that won't join their union and pay dues. So they push these laws through behind the scenes. And the people that they're supposed to help, which is people, you know, it's like magically by saying you should pay $20 an hour, then the businesses get to absorb, which means we get to absorb that additional $4 an hour somewhere. It's going to cost every McDonald's $250,000 a year more in wages to do this.
Well, that's just the wages. That's not even the payroll taxes and everything, other cost that comes on top of those wages.
Well, I think that's all in. I think that's calculated in at $250,000. But the wages drive it all. And there's going to be fewer workers. I mean, we saw what happened when they did that in Seattle. And people are used to be able to call one of the delivery services and get food at a reasonable price. And now, you know, it's more expensive than if they drove to a posh place and bought the same sandwich. And so people are buying less stuff, and those businesses are suffering, and the drivers don't have the ability to get secondary income and everything else. So I think what they're carving out now is people that work at stadiums, airports, arenas.
Well, they're picking and choosing which jobs are worth $20 an hour and which ones aren't, which politicians are the last people on the planet we want choosing what a job is worth. Because they're not going to choose
chose light rail. So that should have prevented them from ever making a decision about how to spend money until the end of time.
Yeah, and we know what's going to happen, right? We've already seen it. We've seen that the more kiosks at McDonald's, right? We've seen those. Okay. And they've now got the ability to make hamburgers from a machine. Mm-hmm. So you're going to go from having 10 employees, 12 employees per shift to having two people to feed and clean the machine. Mm-hmm. That's it. The rest of it is going to be all automated. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay for it with your card at the kiosk outside. Even if you drive up, you're going to just tap your card on the thing. Mm-hmm. And you'll have a robotic arm handing you your bag. That's what's going to happen.
I think if my memory isn't failing me, which it does often lately, almost everybody's first job in this country is now working for McDonald's. You look at CEOs and senators and representatives and lawyers and everybody that worked at a summer job or worked part-time when they were going to school, who learned to get out of bed and bathe themselves and show up on time and listen to somebody and follow orders and clean and all these necessary life skills we learned when we started working. I think I was working in the fields though when I was like first time like 10. But regularly when I was about 14.
Yeah.
And you learn to show up and put in a day's work and listen to instructions and all those things that are necessary for doing anything in life. Now, where are they going to learn it? From their video games?
At 14, I was washing dishes at the family restaurant, right? That's what I was doing at 14. Yeah. Then at 16, I went and was working at a Shakey's Pizza and things like that. No, at 16, I was working at a restaurant, Parisi's, washing dishes. Mm. You know, working at a different restaurant. They paid me more. Mm. And so I was washing dishes there. And then I went to, was a dough roller at Shakey's Pizza at 18. Mm. You know, the guy who made your dough. Yeah. So, yeah, that's how it works. And what they're making, the really disturbing part of this is they're making it harder to get on that first rung of the economic ladder. Mm-hmm. Mm. And if you can't get on that first rung of the economic ladder, you're not on the economic ladder.
No.
And so they're making it harder and harder and harder to get on that first run. And they're doing it deliberately.
Yeah.
And that's the truly disturbing part, that they're doing this deliberately.
And that's because they want more people on the dole. They want more people having to beg, hat in hand, the government for subsistence level living.
So
they don't want them to earn subsistence level. They want them to beg for it.
Yeah, so then they are obligated to vote for the people who will continue that check.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a disturbing trend. It is a highly disturbing trend. Well, we're going to move on about disturbing trends. The U.S. government and Stanford pioneered the censorship scheme that Europe is trying to impose on, well, not just Europeans, because, you know, if our companies want to make it into the European market, they have to comply with these European laws, right?
Yeah, so... Stanford and the CIA and the FBI and Homeland Security and the Pentagon and all these people created all these little behind-the-scenes NGOs and with very innocent-sounding names like I don't remember any of the names because they were so innocent-sounding they didn't stick out, and that was the reason.
That's the point, right?
And they talked about things like coalitions of course, empowerment and inclusiveness and da 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 da. And what they did basically was strong arm social media. The mainstream press, like the three people that watch network TV now, they've been strong armed forever because they need the FCC licenses to transmit. So all they got to do is just kind of wink at them and go, and they do whatever the government wants because they'll turn off the picture, the bright, shiny picture that comes on our TV if they don't. So they basically did that to people in the U.S. Now, Europeans, of course, they got the idea and they decided they're going to take it to a higher level or a lower level. And what's going to happen is there's either going to be, because this will happen in Europe until they get really mad and throw them all out, which will be in another 10 or 15 years. We're going to have two separate internets, European rules for European internet, or they're de facto, those rules are going to be imposed on us. So if our Facebook, wants to... be Facebook in Europe, then they'll have to be held to whatever their censorship standard is, which means that we'll be held to it. So that's kind of like letting the World Health Organization, run our health requirements for vaccinations and all the rest of that stuff here. And it's scary because those people in Belgium they're just flat out crazy.
Yeah. And we already have two internets, right? If we think about it, we've got the Chinese internet and then the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And so now we're going to, divide that even more. So
fractured internets. And it's actually, they talk about it being difficult, but you know way more about programming I do. With the whiz-bang tech they have and the algorithms they can write, it'd be pretty simple for them to set that up. But, what that means is that it's going to add to our cost, and somehow it's going to cost us more money.
Yeah, well,
and it's going to cost us freedom too, because there's going to be some leakage.
Yeah, well, the end consumer always pays all costs, right? This is something that's so fundamental to reality, is that the person who's the last person to pay for things is the person who pays for all of it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't have that thing. That's right.
Well, it's reality, but not our reality. Their reality is different than our reality. Their reality is ivory tower elitist, don't have to worry about a job because their government pensions are marked to rate of inflation, and you know, they'll put us in jail for not paying taxes as long as, you know, they get the big checks. Yeah.
Well, we want to talk about someone who's living in an alternate reality. We're going to go to Mr. Fields here in a second. He's talking about justice.
Not Mr. Fields, but one of the Supreme
Court
justices.
Well, Mr. Fields can be on an alternate reality sometimes, too, but that's not on this particular occasion. On this particular occasion, we're talking about a Supreme Court justice who has a strange view of the First Amendment and probably the entire Constitution, though I'm not entirely, I don't know why anybody's surprised, but let's see what Richard has to say about this First Amendment and hamstringing the government.
Cool.
Next week. Hi, this is Richard Fields with Report from the Fields. As I alluded last week, censorship may be the most burning issue of the day. Manta EB is an old school, honest liberal, supportive of civil liberties and suspicious of big business. He was the reporter writing at Rolling Stone who coined the term vampire squid, referring to Goldman Sachs in a series of exposés on the company's questionable business ethics. But now the liberal wing of the American political scene has been captured by progressives, and Manta Ibe is persona non grata to the left. You see, after he purchased Twitter, Elon Musk hired Ibe and other honest reporters to do some serious reporting on how the former management of Twitter had been genuflecting to the government in its coverage of the pandemic and lockdowns and the alleged corruption of Hunter Biden and by extension Joe Biden. Acting on the information of Twitter censorship uncovered by Taibbi and other reporters, then Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt and then Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry sued in Missouri versus Biden to stop the government censorship of social media. They won at the district court level and got a comprehensive injunction against further federal agency censorship. The injunction was later lifted by a 6-3 vote at the U.S. Supreme Court, and the case decision has been appealed to the Supreme Court, which heard arguments last week. This case should be a slam dunk First Amendment victory case, but it looks like it will be close. The government admits to being regularly in direct contact with social media giants, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. They claim they are not giving orders, but merely offering advice. But given ongoing efforts in Congress to more severely regulate these companies, offering unsought advice is sort of like a mafia don suggesting, "You sure have a nice business there. You might want to consider taking out some insurance from my cousin Vinny." In other words, extortion, pure and simple. The censorship and algorithmic shifting of attention away from anything opposed to the government narrative is massive and exacting in detail. This show has been affected. Before censorship, this show, The Libertarian Counterpoint, had its shows, all its shows, nicely filed in order of production on YouTube. Now, a search of YouTube brings up a total of 5 random shows from the 33 years we've been on the air and a bunch of other non-relevant links. Likes on my Facebook posts have dwindled from dozens to a handful. A post I did on LinkedIn with a headline comparing the COVID lockdowns lies to the weapons of mass destruction lies that got us into war in Iraq was canceled. Respected public health academics Jay Bhattacharya and Martin Kulldorff, authors of the Great Barrington Declaration, which offered early, truthful critiques of the futility and folly of the lockdowns, were effectively canceled. Jeffrey Tucker of Brownstone Institute, who has done some of the best, most responsible reporting on the pandemic and its Keystone Cops aftermath, is almost impossible to find on any media, social or legacy media, included, except for the Epoch Times and now X. It's disturbing that the United States Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said in reply to the attorney arguing for Missouri, and I quote, "My biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways," end of quote. Really? Maybe I'm quaint and old-fashioned, but I thought that the whole point of the entire Bill of Rights was hamstringing government. We'll see in a month or two whether a majority on the court is okay with hamstringing the government, given the predilection of the Chief Justice and at least one of the Trump appointees. We're looking at you, Kavanaugh, to splitting the baby. I am not particularly optimistic. I'm Richard Fields, and that's this report, this week's Report from the Fields.
Well spoken, Mr. Fields from the Fields.
Yeah, it's disturbing that we have people in the Supreme Court who don't understand that the whole purpose of the Constitution was to hamstring government. Mm. That's the literal point. And we have a Supreme Court justice that doesn't seem to understand that.
A couple of them.
Mm. And I can understand how average people can kind of disagree with that. That's fine. But a Supreme Court justice should be held to higher standards than some guy on Twitter or somebody walking down the street on the understanding
well,
of these
things. The guy on Twitter or somebody walking down the street doesn't have power. You know, do you remember back when you were younger where you didn't worry about politics and everything? It wasn't because you were clueless. It's because that the government wasn't all invasive in every single part of your life. There weren't 180,000 pages of regulations and 65,000 pages of laws, and that's at the federal level. No, we're not talking about the state and local regulations and taxes. There wasn't lawfare going on, which I don't know who coined that phrase, but they deserve a Pulitzer Prize for just that one phrase. It just, government wasn't important. It was a tiny part of our life, and occasionally somebody in government would do something really stupid, and pretty soon they wouldn't be in office anymore. And now, literally every single part of our life, you know, the food we can buy, the jobs we can work at, the clothes we can wear, the communications device we use, the radio we can listen to, where we can walk, what we can say is controlled by government. And eventually, the arguments about this reach the Supreme Court. And so the people that are on the Supreme Court should have a knowledge that's visceral of the Constitution, which is designed to protect us from that invasiveness, but because they are grown up in it, they love it.
Well, you've got there's a certain segment of our population that thinks the government is there to protect you, but it's not. The government doesn't exist to protect you.
No.
It's not its job, not you as an individual. You could argue that it's there to protect our collective rights from invasion. From external invasion. It's there to not infringe on our individual rights. Mm. That's its duty, to not infringe on our individual rights.
Well, it's falling down on that duty, let me tell you.
But we've got a whole swath of politicals that of the political spectrum that wants to reimagine the Second Amendment. So is it any surprise that same group wants to reimagine the First?
Ah. No, sorry. I didn't know where you were going, and I corrected you. I apologize. Yeah.
So we've got the one. If you're willing to reimagine one amendment, you're going to be willing to reimagine any of them suit your worldview. Mm-hmm. And that's the real big danger on this one.
And if anybody reads the history of this country, except for some of the stuff they're making up now, and doesn't come to the conclusion that our founders were enormously fearful of invasive and overreaching government, with good reason. Although that government that they had a revolution over does about 1/100th of what this government that we have now does, then you're an idiot, because everything they designed, the First Amendment, the Constitution itself, much less all the amendments, the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms and form a militia.
Well, don't forget the Tenth Amendment that literally states if it's not specifically in the Constitution, you can't do it.
Yeah, but
we've ignored that one.
And all rights are reserved for the people or the states. It's not all rights are reserved for the government. You got to go fight for them. It's the other way around. And
Well, we're going to see where this goes, because in Canada, they want to put you in prison now. They're working towards putting you in prison now before you commit a thought crime. Not before you commit the crime, like if you're planning to go out and rob a bank or planning an assassination or something of that nature. No. If you're thinking about, I don't know, upsetting somebody with the wrong way, in the wrong way. Of course, certain people are allowed to upset people, but you can't upset certain groups of people, protected classes, which of course you get to just make up.
Yeah.
And so if you are And it's not just Canada. Ireland just passed. Is it Ireland?
Was yeah,
it Ireland?
they're going full-blown all the way crazy in Ireland. Yeah,
they just passed this new anti-speech law that is going to set people in jail simply because you upset somebody. And of course, it's if you upset people with political power is what's going to actually happen. Because if you think you and me are going to get, it's only protected classes that get this.
Well, yeah, and one of the things that the writing's already on the wall for the Canadian thing is one of the examples they use is for anybody who promotes genocide. So promoting genocide, and we know what that means, progressive speak for taking the Israeli side in what's happening in Gaza. We'll go to prison for longer than if they raped a child.
Yeah, thought crimes are now actually worse than crimes.
Remember, can we say this together? Because we say it on the show all the time. Sticks and stones may break my bones.
Yep, but words.
But words will never hurt me.
No, they should not.
No.
I mean, if you are a full functioning human being, words, somebody else's opinions about you should not have a major impact.
It's not that they made me feel bad. No, I made me feel bad for being an idiot enough to listen to them and own it. All you got to do is A, not listen, and B, not own it.
All right, John, we got like 6 minutes left, so I want to get these last three here.
Please.
Biden-Harris's daycare disaster. They want to create a national daycare system where the most someone's going to have to pay is like, what is it, $10 a day, $10 a month?
$10 a month.
Yeah, $10 a month for daycare.
And they want kids to go to preschool at age 4, and that's going to be paid for as well. But when all the studies show that that's actually worse for kids, they need to be wild little animals for a while before they go to school.
Yeah.
Like the Head Start program. That's basically the Head in the Sand program or Pound Your Head on the Wall program. And this is lunacy because, A, there isn't any money. And B, maybe it's a stupid thing to do. And B, there isn't any money to pay for it.
Well, until we know what happens when the government starts throwing checks at these kinds of things, right? Look at education. When the government decided we're going to pretend to pay for people's education, essentially free handing out free student loans. That's a bad way to phrase that.
Eventually,
they are going to be free.
30 years, they're written off. If you factor in inflation, even with the interest, if you allow somebody to if you make payments, I think it's currently 20 years of payments, they just end the loan. You know, so you just make the minimum payment forever and they end the loan. Or if you work for a nonprofit for 10 years, or the government.
Yeah.
For 10 years, then the loan gets written off. All right, you know, if you're going to do that, reverse it. If you work for the government, you should pay a higher rate of interest. And if you work in the private sector and actually create money and wealth and jobs, then you should write it off.
Yeah, but all the government interference in the education system did was create an expensive education.
Yes.
And so all this is going to do is create massively expensive daycare.
Yeah, and private daycare won't be able to compete.
And it'll be crappy quality because we've seen what happens to the school.
It'll be unionized, so because that's what, you know, the progressives do, and on and on and on. I think we just ate 5 of the 6 minutes.
Yeah, so California has, misjudged their economic benefits again. Here, shall we go? Because they thought they added, 300,000 jobs or something. It turns out that they were off by 250,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, they miscounted how many high-paying jobs they had. Hmm. They thought they had 300,000, and they really only had
created 50. So there was actually a net. Once again, we already knew this, a net outflow of high-paying jobs in the state of California.
Yeah. My question is, who keeps coming up with these estimates here in California? These people are terrible.
They're the people that came up with the cost for the light rail. I mean, the high-speed rail. From Bakersfield to Modesto or whatever it is, yeah. $100 billion more.
Oh, it's, yeah. And we wonder why we have a $68 billion, $73 billion, $36 billion. Who the heck knows what the real number is that's coming out of those clowns down the street, right? The real budget
clown
deficit.
Clown college, yeah.
Yeah, who knows what the actual budget deficit is? Yeah. You just make these numbers up at some point.
Yeah.
And we don't find out until.
And then they'll just go to Uncle Sugar because California's who gets the progressives elected, and they'll give them a grant. They already gave them about $20 billion in grant. That's why it's not a $100 billion deficit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, what are we going to do?
They don't give grants to Texas, though.
Well, no, of course not, because Texas doesn't
don't
have
even
the...
let them protect their own borders.
Well, yeah, California already has a wall, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't need a new wall in California. We've got one.
Well, that's because they're all going Texas.
Yeah. Well, because they're all going to Texas because California has a wall.
Mm.
And it's a little easier to walk through where there's not a wall. But what happens when you can't get through California? I mean, through Texas. Now they're going through Arizona and that little part of New Mexico, right? Mm. It's just, it's whack-a-mole. They're playing whack-a-mole with that thing. All right, so we got like 2 minutes left, John. California is trying to create a program where they're allegedly helping people with first-time home buyers and home loans and whatnot. But what they're not telling people, or what's in the fine print, is that you have to share your profits back with the state when you sell that house later on.
Hmm. Shocker.
So it's amazing.
And you have to share your profits even if there aren't any profits there when you sell your house later.
Even when you sell your house later, they get a percentage of the house. Even a loss, they get a percentage of the
That's a scam that even the mafia wouldn't try. Well, maybe they would, but you know.
Yeah, so we're going to give you $20,000 to help you with the down payment, but when you sell the house, you have to give us 10% or whatever it is. Yeah. And since your house is $200,000 at minimum, you know, you're going to give us $20,000. We're going to make some money off of this deal.
Yeah,
yeah. And since in California, most houses aren't $20,000. You're talking $400,000, $500,000.
Sacramento, I think it's almost $5,000 the average house.
Yeah.
So you're talking Bay Area, it's $1,500,000.
And if you're talking someone sells it in 10 years and they've actually made a profit, then you're going to get a whole big $200,000 check to the government. Your investment for your next house is not going to be as big as you thought it was going to be, because
imagine that.
Yeah,
imagine that.
And people will line up for it. They will line up and go after the and take this kind of a program and think that the government is there for them.
And then, even when they cancel the program, the bureaucracy that they created will somehow still have jobs.
Oh yeah, the bureaucrats.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. The bureaucrats always have jobs, John. That's the one thing we know. We've got a minute left. We've got the bureaucrats will still have a job because the bureaucrats always have a job. That's when we go back to the front of these things. We talk about the unions creating carve-outs for the.
I like what Javier, my new hero Javier Milei called them. What do you call them? Parasites and vampires.
Yeah. Yeah. The
bureaucrats.
The bureaucrats.
Parasites and a parasitic class. Yeah. Sucking the life out of the economy.
Well, he showed that it can be done. What is it? In 3 months?
Chainsaw.
In 3 months, he cut half the government and now has a surplus rather than a deficit.
Mm.
You know, it's amazing what you can do when you stop spending money.
Mm. Imagine that.
All right. Thank you for watching. Thank you, John, for being here. Thank you to everybody inside for working so hard. Have a good night. And please remember to love everybody.
Love everybody.
And we'll see you next week.